Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. Time to elaborate. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to The Backyard. This is Margaret Marshall, your host, and I want to welcome you again. I hope you are able to take a virtual tour with me, or trip, I should say, to the island of Jamaica. If you've been there, or if you are there, or if you've even just visited, was grown up, was brought up, whatever, you know that at this time of the evening, we're usually chilling in the backyard, on the front porch, on the deck, on the beach, or someplace relaxed with our favorite drink. So I want you to virtually take that trip with me this evening, because we have a very interesting twist to our broadcast this evening. I will be sharing some information with you that comes from one of my favorite historians that have made really the show that I do so much more interesting and meaningful. And also I will be rebroadcasting a very interesting show about the Pang family of Balaclava. So without any further ado, I would like to welcome the callers on the board as well as those listening online. I hope you will really just relax and enjoy the evening with us. We meet once a week thanks to Blog Talk Radio. This segment is called Backyard Labrish, and we're here each week at 8 o'clock where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And to give you a little background about why Backyard Labrish came into being, I have been retired for some time and have not really been in touch over the period of my life here in the United States. I was born and raised in Jamaica, in Kingston, Jamaica. I migrated to the USA in 1959. And all my children were born here. I have made the US my home. I am now retired and in my very favorite state of Georgia, which I absolutely love. However, I took a trip to Europe a few years ago, and I've always loved history and was just awed by the way the people in Madrid retained their history. I was just fascinated by it and actually went online while I was there to see if I could find any information about the period I grew up in, or even before that, because, you know, I was way before the internet and the computers. So I didn't find anything about the period I was thinking about, and then came back and decided that I would start to research and see what I could do to put online. And then I was introduced to Blog Talk Radio and have decided to voice the history. And not only that, invite my peers that have a story that they would like preserved. So So the tagline of wanting to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve was born. Because I know that the only way we can preserve our history is by making it known. And each individual have their own history. And we can see by the popularity of, let's just say, Oprah, how many people shared information about their past or present and how much it enriched the lives of the people who listened or heard. So I am hoping that somewhere along the line, people will come to the site, or the people who are led to the site will learn something about people of the past or about my generation once we're not here anymore, because I think the new technology is really so cool because it's in the cloud. So it can always be accessed, and hopefully it will be useful. So let me just start now by reading about Dr. Lumsden, who's responsible for the show that will be aired later on. But on one of her many websites, she mentioned that she was, I retired 7 years ago. I don't have the date on this particular article here, but I'm assuming it's longer than 7 years because I discovered her in 2008, I think. But it says, 7 years ago, after nearly 50 years of teaching, from 1956 to 1991 at high school, and from 1980 to 2004 at the university level. During all that time, and still today, I have been researching Jamaican history, especially in the period between the Morant Bay Rebellion and the 1938 riots. My doctoral thesis, which I worked on from 1975 to 88, was on the life and political career of Dr. J. Robert Love, the Black Bahamian who played a significant role in politics and journalism in Jamaica between 1890 and 1914. My work on Robert Love introduced me to a highly significant but little researched period of Jamaican history, when 2 to 3 generations of tough, courageous, and self-confident Jamaicans laid the foundations of the modern nation. The almost total neglect of the achievements of those generations has left a telling gap in Jamaicans' perception of their past. I hope that with my websites, I may be able to do a little to start to fill that gap and restore the lives of the people of those generations to the Jamaican consciousness. Well, I just want to state here that she has certainly stirred my consciousness about that period. And so I really, really am grateful that I'm able to voice some of what she has written. So I would consider that I'm sort of continuing or expanding or embracing all of those what Dr. Lumsden another couple of historians that I have used on the programming. So also I'd like to read you some other excerpts of what Dr. Lumsden thinks about, has on our website about history. Some of what she wrote, as well as quotes from other people, not necessarily Jamaicans, but just history on a whole. There is a quote from Jean DeCoster and Barbara Lela in the introduction to Voices in Exile, which is a 1989 publication, where they said, given the strange power of Jamaica to erase its history. So apparently Jamaica and Jamaicans have not done a very good job at retaining their history. Now, this is from Dr. Lumsden. Day after day, as I continue to explore Jamaica's history, especially through not exclusively in the period between 1865 and 1944, I find many aspects of that history that seem to have disappeared, to have been erased, overlooked, forgotten, and even rejected. I am trying in the websites I am creating to provide at least a glimpse of a more extensive view of Jamaica's past than the somewhat blinkered and stereotyped view which has become all too commonly accepted in the last half century. So you can, my listeners can get a feel for what Dr. Lums's objective is in doing her research. And on that same site that she has various sites. If you want to research a little more about what she writes about, go to www.joyousjam.com or just Google Dr. Joy Lumsden and you'll get to several of her pages. And on that same page when she's talking about, you know, the erasing of history, she said, some thoughts on history, and these are by other writers. Without knowledge of the past, the way into the thickets of the future is desperate and unclear. And that quote was from a Lauren Elsley, who is a scientist. The past actually happened, but history is only what someone wrote down. And that was by Whitney Brown, who is a U.S. comedian. I'm not familiar with him, but some of my listeners may be. Here's another quote. I found out that those folks in the history books were real people. They didn't live in the past. They inhabited the present, their present, and it was filled with problems and stress and niceties and decencies and heroism, just as any time is. And that quote was by a Joy Hankim, H-A-N-K-I-M, who's a teacher and writer and a historian herself. Now, here's another one that I found interesting. People in the past acted not in response to the way historians, armed with hindsight and the theologies of the statistician, defined that world, but in response to the way they deemed it to be. So in other words, this is Peter McPhee, M-C-P-H-E-E, McPhee, I suppose. That's the way he described what he thought about history. And here's another one. Written history is the fragmented record of the often inexplainable actions of innumerable bewildered human beings, set down and interpreted according to their own limitations by other human beings equally bewildered. That's why it's important to make your own history, write your own history, so nobody has to put it together for you. And that quote was by a Dame Victoria Wedgwood, who's also a historian. And the last one I want to share with you before I start the rebroadcast is, men wiser and more learned than I have discerned in history a plot, a rhythm, a predetermined pattern. These historians are concealed from me. I can see only one emergency following upon another, as wave follows upon wave. Only one great fact with respect to which Since it is unique, there can be no generalization. Only one safe rule for the historian that he should recognize in the development of human destinies, the play of the contingent and the unforeseen. In other words, ladies and gentlemen, each of us as part of a city, as part of a nation, as part of the world, contributes to history. And with the technology that is available to us today, we should be embracing the fact that we can participate in history making. So I encourage my fellow senior Jamaicans to join me in this passion to leave a living history, a living legacy of things that were important to us when we were growing up on the island. And this goes for anybody from wherever they come from, but I am concentrated on Jamaica because, you know, that's where my roots are. Although I am a full-blooded American, I suppose, now because I've retired and I am planning to stay right here. So, but I do really, really think it's important that we really delve into the good things about our past because it can serve as an anchor for the now or future generation. So with that said, ladies and gentlemen, I appreciate you visiting with me this evening, and I'm going to start our program on the Pang Sisters of Balaclava. So sit back in your easy chair and enjoy. So here we go. Bear with me while I try. You know, I'm not all that technical, so I'm going to do my best to try and do it right. So here we go again. Let me try one more time to plug it in. And you'll be enjoying Kenneth MacLeod as he does his classical reggae, as I call it. So just relax. Go get your favorite thing, and remember you're going to be pretending that you're on the island of Jamaica in your favorite chair, all ready to just be. First of all, you can feel the balmy breezes across. Because for those of you who might not know, we have the trade winds that come by every evening and blows right across the island. That's why the air is always fresh. And you can really feel, as we say, no problem, Mom. It's like a big tranquilizer. So relax and enjoy. ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the backyard. This is Margaret Marshall, your host, and I want to welcome you and hope that you were just chilling to the music. You have selected your favorite chair. You perhaps have a cup of mint tea or perhaps a cup of chocolate, as we usually do sometimes in the mornings in Jamaica. Anyway, I want to welcome my co-host, Donna. Good evening, Donna. Welcome to the backyard.
Good evening. I'm looking forward to the night. It's going to be pretty interesting. And I also just want to tell you, you might see me on Channel 2 News. I've been at a little parent-teacher meeting tonight, and they asked me to do a little interview. So you might see me on Channel 2.
Oh, my goodness. Our co-host is already a star. Another time. Well, what time would that be?
They said this evening news, so I just walked in, so they were still filming, you know, when I left the school, so we'll see what's going to happen.
Okay, great. Well, I'm glad that you took the time to come visit us in the backyard. So pull up your easy chair, because this evening, as you know, we're going back in the days. I call this Ladies' Month. We're really celebrating the women, historical women of Jamaica, both those who were born there, grew up there, fell in love with Jamaica, or just have been there for a long time. So I'd like to start the show off in a little reverse order. I'd like to talk about our person of the week. As you remember, Donna, this month we decide to feature a person, a living person with us of the week each week.
Right.
So I would like to talk about our person of the week this evening, because she is the reason we have all these intriguing stories about some of the Jamaican women of the past. Remember last week we had a very little-known woman. This week we have several all in one family.
Right.
And Donna, I'd like to just mention to our listeners, first of all, again, welcome to Backyard Labrish to our listeners calling in, as well as our listeners listening online. We're glad you could take the time to share some news with us. You know, our purpose in the backyard is to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve Jamaica's rich and diverse culture. So we're always talking about something that has to do with the past, because a lot of people that left the island in the early days or before independence don't have a lot of information, you know, of the way things were when they were growing up. So I am just so thrilled to be able to find all this information. And our person of the week happens to be the person who has brought us most of the information we shared over the Black History Month, the Jamaican History Month. Donna?
Yes, right. Yes.
So, as you know, it's Dr. Joy Lumsden. And Dr. Lumsden was really born in London. She's English. And she was at college at Cambridge University in London when she met her husband, who is a Jamaican, Mr. Vin Lumsden, and she and him returned to Jamaica in 1956.
Mm-hmm.
And she's still living there and doing some wonderful research.
And just like myself, all she did was fall in love with Jamaica. That's what happened. And, you know, see what happened.
She fell in love with a Jamaican first. Then, I'm sure once she got there, she was just hooked even more.
Oh, yeah. Well, she's really hooked, because I tell you what, she's done a lot of extensive research on Jamaica.
Oh, man. As Jamaicans, we really owe a lot to her. Anyway, she met her husband at Cambridge, where they were both studying, and she taught at Woolmer's Girls' School. So all the Woolmer's old girls out there, somebody might be very familiar with her, from 1957 to 1991.
Mm-hmm.
and that overlapped with her teaching at the University of the West Indies also from 1980 to 2004. Now, she did her PhD at the University of the West Indies during, 1988. She has 5 children. All but the eldest were born in Jamaica. So her first child was born in London. She has 8 grandchildren, 4 of whom are at universities here in the United States. Now, she has spent most of her adult life in Jamaica. She went there as a young lady. She was born in 1934. We're just a year apart. So she, most of her life is spent in Jamaica, and most of that time she has been studying and researching Jamaican history, especially the period from 1865 to 1944, and she calls that the Crown Colony period. She's now retired and spends her time putting all of this wonderful research online and making it available to the world. So for the people who have never heard of her, I mean, you've heard a lot about her on the show because, I'm just so enthused. She has tons of information. And Donna, do you have her website? We can give it at the end of the show.
Yeah, let's give it at the end of the show. I had it up, and then I was looking at some other things. But again, one of the things that reminds me of when I think of her and all that she's doing, it reminds me so much of you. I mean, it's like you all are like a hand in glove. I mean, the only difference, of course, is that you're actually from Jamaica, and you left Jamaica and been, out of Jamaica for a long time, but you still have that drive and that love of your country. And then she's not from there, goes there and develops this passion about, Jamaica. And so, I mean, it's like you all are like a hand in glove in a sense. And I think that's one of the reasons why you're so in tune with everything that she's doing, because it's really your passion. And it's just neat to find, another person that has the exact same passion that you have.
I am telling you, it's so right, because I just got connected to her all on the internet. I have never met her. And I'm hoping that one day she'll be a guest on the show.
Yeah.
Anyway, because of her research, and what intrigues me, Donna, and I'll share some of this with our listeners, is how she has to piece all of these things together. I mean, she's going through the newspaper, through, anything she can find. One thing leads to another. She'll be researching one period or one person, and then she gets connected to something or someone, through that original research, and then she starts researching that. So like me, she's doing several of these things at the same time. But it's also thrilling, believe you me. I'm sure she's wondering, what should I do next? Because she's always busy. You start one thing, and it leads you to something else. And that's how I found her. I was researching something when I found one piece of her material that led me to her personally. I always go to the source. And then it just opened up all of this for me. I want to live another 25 or 30 years because I won't be able to finish to cover all of her material.
Well, thing about it is she's just like you, because you're in this project and you're still researching yourself, and it's kind of interesting because when you look, as a matter of fact, let me just tell everyone now that they can go to Joyous Jam, JOYOUSJAM, Joyous Jam. .googlepages, Google pages, pages, .com. And what I did was I did a / and I put all my pages, just like that, ALLMY pages, PAGES. And it brings up all of the work she's done, plus some that she's working on. Just like you, you're always working on something, got your hands over here, your feet over there. And yet, you know, there's so much that you've completed, too. So, I mean, and with her, the same thing. There's so much that she's done and that she's still got her hands in something else over here working on that. But I remember when we did that thing on Howard, you know, the Jamaicans at Howard. I mean, there she had a lot of information that, you know, you didn't even know about. And it was just like, wow, you know, so enlightening and breath of fresh air to know about people at a time in the United States when it was a repressive time that were moving forward in such a progressive manner.
Yes. Well, I want to talk about what she's brought to light, and we'll be discussing in a little more details tonight. And one of the reasons I was drawn to this particularly is because in the old days, my mother's family is from Westmoreland, Savannah Lamar, as it's really called, but we call it Sav Lamar. And in the days when I was growing up, We went to that part of the island. I was born and raised in Kingston, but we went to that part of the island by diesel. Diesel is no longer running in Jamaica. But anyway, we went by diesel. And the diesel is sort of the passenger part of the train. You know, the train itself would carry more of the merchants, the country people who took things to market in Kingston, and, you know, that kind of thing. But the diesel is where people traveled on if they were not involved with anything they had to carry except for their suitcase. So we would go by diesel. I would go by diesel and get off at a certain station and then take the Royal Mail, which would be like the let's call it now, like the postal car, you know, the Royal Mail was what carried the mail that the train brought to the individual post offices over the country.
Okay.
So I was very familiar with balaclava and in St. Elizabeth. I was very familiar with the name. So, you know, I was very intrigued with this. Now, I never heard of this family, you know, perhaps, you know, it was in Jamaica in those days, we didn't have a lot of news as you found out from our radio when we did the show on the radio about when radio came on out there.
Right.
So, and as young people growing up, you'd be more interested in the songs and the calypso than the news, you know. So there might have been some broadcast about this because I never really heard of them.
Mm.
So tonight we're going to celebrate and enlighten our listeners about the Pang sisters. Their names are spelled P-H-A-N-G. And they were from Balaclava, St. Elizabeth. I have a lot of friends from St. Elizabeth. And these are the stories. This is the snippets that we have. Covers from their parents got there in 1890 to up to 1971, when must have been the last information that she had about this family. Now, this family had seven sisters. There were seven sisters. And not only did some of them make history in Jamaica, but all over the world. I found that. Remember I talked about how people in the old days traveled. They traveled a lot, and they traveled by boat. And you know how those trips could have been long and tedious because nothing was as modern and moved as fast as everything does now. So I can just imagine. And I know that while I was growing up, and even since I left, I know that there are a lot of families who one child might have been born in London, another one in Jamaica, one might be born in Grand Cayman or some other part of the world, because the parents or people traveled a lot. They went away. They got married. I have one girlfriend who, like Dr. Lumsden, she has one son that was born in London, and another son that was born in Jamaica. So we had Jamaicans really being born all over the place. Now, the interesting thing about that in those days, I know that Jamaica did, and I think still does, recognize dual citizenship. So a child or a child born, say, in London could have an English birth certificate and also a Jamaican birth certificate. Anyway, let me just tell you a little bit about her parents. Now, the first thing I'm going to start off with is an article that came out in the Gleaner, which, you know, is still in existence as our main media. But this was dated December 30th, 1898. And I was intrigued by the language that they used in those days. You know, they used a lot of what we call Old English. And from reading this, Donna, you can even sort of get a glimpse from how the reporters thought about people. It's interesting. It starts off, and this really tickled me. The Grand Market on Saturday the 24th was a phenomenal success in Balaclava. The peasantry seemed to have waited in the surrounding regions for that gala outing, for they swarmed into the village in thousands, and many declare never since the railway time was such a gathering on a Saturday here. You know, it was so amazing. It was asserted, and with apparent truth, that Mr. Charles Pang, the Chinese merchant, took cash across the counter of £180, besides £20 wholesale of rum. You remember this rum story already in another paper?
Oh, my goodness.
Listen, we took as a fact that he emptied a 120-gallon pigeon of rum, that is the measures they use in those days, between Friday morning and Saturday night.
Oh, my goodness.
Other stores did, in comparison, then fully 1,000 pounds of rum flowed into Balaclava on that day. Now, listen, this is the other part that I found interesting. The market was elaborately filled with everything that could possibly be required for a happy and cheerful household, and the multitude behaved was pleasurable decorum and happiness. Not a single drunken arrest was made. On Sunday, calmness marked the scene. No yelling, no squabbles developed. Isn't that something? They drank all that rum and they were drunk.
Wiped out. That's all it was. They were wiped out.
Oh, churches were filled, and a pleasant day was ended with a splendid fall of rain lasting from 6 p.m. to 7:30. On Monday, the people could be seen in hundreds promenading the highway, quietly enjoying themselves in a rational manner. I was just tickled pink, and this is what I mean. She collects her information about peers or people from the Gleaner, you know, reports. And
right.
It brings me, as a sidebar, it brings me to what we're trying to do now, Donna, is to have people leave a living legacy of their life or their success or just their thoughts.
Yeah.
By going to the Backyard Labrish website and just leaving a profile or leaving something about them or putting up a picture or putting up a video, you know, and talk to say something or do something that you would want another generation in another 50 years to know about you and to know about, you know, something about you. So these people had nothing about themselves. She's the one who is putting it together just from, you know, death certificates, articles in the newspaper, and whatever else she can find.
Okay.
So I know how tedious that can be, you know, for her. So I want to really just continue to applaud her for all that she's doing.
Yes. Well, you know, the thing about it, I mean, to kind of, for first of all, let me just say to everyone, make sure that you do go to backyardlabrish.com. Go there and, you know, leave a little footprint, even if you, you know, have just a saying that you remember, or if you just want to leave some comments on something that you've heard, or, you know, a lot of times there's gaps in some of the information that we have. Even as we are going through Ms. Unsom's information, we come to find that she says very clearly, I don't have certain information. There's gaps here and there. And if you have information to share and fill in the gaps, that would be a great place to go to backyardlabrish.com and just, you know, go in there and leave a profile. Leave something, leave a legacy there of who you are. You know, leave a little footprint of who you are and share information with us. But, you know, again, one of the things that she said, and I'm going to tell you, it was kind of interesting, is when you look at some of the people that you're going to talk about tonight, that some of them, we don't know what happened to them. They just kind of like disappeared off the map. And as people, that's what can happen to us. We disappear off the map. And we were talking, and it's kind of like a little sidebar. You know, do you remember in reality your great-great-great-great-grandparents? You know, a lot of people don't. Now, of course, you know, the Kennedys or the Rockefellers or, you know, certain, you know, phenomenal, you know, people in our American society, people will know their name or, you know, now it's, and all, but the thing about it is to also remember that you should create your own story. We should tell our own story, as opposed to Ms. Joy Lunson is doing, piecing together these phenomenal seven young ladies, piecing together bits of information about them from these papers and everything. They should have really told their own story. But I understand that times were different, but here's an opportunity for people to do it. And I just commend you for pulling together and doing this for history and for Jamaica. Back to you.
Thank you. Okay. So we've sort of established the prominence of her father, you know, of the father of these young ladies that we're going to be talking a little more in depth about. He was considered a leading Chinese merchant in the dry goods provision and produce trade in Jamaica. He was born in British Guyana. Mr. Pang arrived in Jamaica in 1890, and in 1892, started a business in Balaclava, St. Elizabeth, where he still is. This is from the newspaper in 1909. Mm. So that, I suppose, was, they didn't mention, nothing here is mentioned if when he came, he brought his wife with him. I didn't notice anything there. Did you, Donna?
No, I sure didn't. All of a sudden, I just know that, you know, I saw where they had gotten married, and then I saw where it alluded to the fact that something had happened, a fire, something had happened. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, their business was burnt down at one time in Balaclava, but they were considered sort of the leading merchants in those days of that particular city. Balaclava mm-hmm. in St. Elizabeth. And I'm sure some of our listeners might be familiar with the name. It's spelled P-H-A-N-G. But I thought it interesting that he was born in British Guyana.
Yeah, that's right.
And he was Chinese. And there was another article or about the part of China that someone came from, which I suppose I'll get to soon, but it's just tons of information about this particular family. Mm-hmm. But I was very intrigued. You know, Donna, like you, I'm an only child, so I'm always intrigued with large families, you know, and just a bunch of sisters, seven sisters. Can you imagine in those days, nothing is mentioned here of any sons?
Oh,
I suppose they were all daughters.
Yeah, I think so, because even when he passed away, it said that he was survived by seven daughters and three grandchildren, so I don't think there were any sons.
Right. I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah.
Anyway, and I'm very intrigued. You know, you can imagine a family with seven female.
Oh,
how interesting that must have been.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
But anyway, the first one I'd like to talk about is, I think her name is May. Is it May? She was born in May, and they named her May. So she went back to China.
Mm-hmm.
And let me just get my papers.
Rosalind was the first one, and I know she married that George Sikowski.
Yeah, that sounds like a foreign name, but they met in China. But let me just talk about May, one of the newspaper clippings about May. In November of 1905, 11-year-old May Pang collected shillings and sixpences. That was the kind of monies we used when I was growing up to Donna. It was pounds, shillings, and pence, as we called it. But in November of 1905, she collected shillings and sixpences from her mother, the servants in the house, the clerks in the store, and Dr. Stimson, S-T-I-M-P-S-O-N, of the Gleaners Fund to provide Christmas dinners for the poor. She was only 11 years old.
Oh,
I thought that was remarkable.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, in this fact, they were so diversified in the family in their passion.
Yeah.
But that really just stood out to me because, you know, there have been several stories recently about children just having this passion to help someone else. You know, and here she is 11 years old and collecting from everybody she could, from her doctor to her mother to the people who worked for her parents, so she could provide Christmas dinner for the poor. So I picked her as my special person. That's why I wanted to talk about her first.
Yeah.
So the Gleena mentioned then when they were talking about that the Pang girls were clearly expected to be good citizens. And as they grew older, they contributed their musical talents to a variety of fundraising concerts, especially during the 1914 and 1918 war. So apparently she went on from being 11 years old to just continue with that passion, because I think she was one of the musicians in the family. So I just wanted to bring her to light first. So you want to talk about your who you chose to speak about, Miss Donna?
Oh, okay. Well, I know you were talking about May, and I remember looking and seeing that she had gone to I guess Shanghai, China.
Right. Let me talk a little bit about her then. In August of 1920, she passed through Ellis Island. Foreigners can relate. Do you know what Ellis Island was, Donna?
Yeah, was that New York?
Yeah, but do you know what the purpose of it was for?
That's where everybody is, where everyone, you know, goes for, you know, that's where you look for opportunity.
I think Ellis Island was the place that all foreigners had to register through, you know, to pass through the U.S., wasn't it?
Oh, they actually had to stop there?
No, I think so. I'm not sure. Anyway, it says that she passed through Ellis Island on her way to Shanghai, China.
Mm-hmm.
And she was with two of her sisters, as two of her sisters had done the previous year. So that was the first year, apparently, she was traveling.
Mm-hmm.
And then it mentioned about her going back on vacation to Jamaica. But there, I think she, let me just see here. She settled in China.
Mm-hmm.
Miss Pang's engagement will now don't be heavy looking up old friends. Oh, this is when she came back to Jamaica in 1920. And she was, this is just as important people would come into the island or leave the island, I suppose the Gleaner reporter would have something in the newspaper about them. And this is what Dr. Lumsden is using to try and piece together their lives. So this particular article mentioned that she had come back to the island in 1920, and she would be visiting friends, and she hinted in her interview that she wanted to make sure, even then, China was sort of not a very friendly place, because she was saying, she hinted in her interview that the efforts for a closer friendship with all people was what she was hoping for in terms of China.
Mm-hmm.
And you can remember, we were under British rule at that time, so I'm sure they were not necessarily very friendly towards China.
Yeah.
I don't remember here. Okay, here's another article from 1970 now. This is much later. This is January 8th, 1970. A Jamaican Chinese, as she likes to describe herself, she was born in Kingston on the first day of May, hence her name. She was the second daughter of seven to the late Mr. and Mrs. Charles Bang of Balaclava, St. Elizabeth, where she grew up. She left the island at an early age to attend school in England and studied at the Royal Academy of Music in London, after which she spent 25 years in China. It was there that she studied ballet. Now, her parents, from one of the eldest Chinese families in the island, were not keen on her lifelong interest in ballet. In the old days, good class Chinese girls never went on stage. So, you know, the class prejudice even existed in China, Donna.
Yeah, I remember someone telling me that even when they had performances, there were men that performed as the women.
Oh, isn't that something?
Something, and depending on what the play was, a man would perform as the woman, or they would find, you know, depending on where it was and what type of setting it was in.
Oh, because it was not proper for women to perform, I suppose.
I guess not. I don't know.
Anyway, this May was very proud of herself. Because her parents didn't want her to go into dancing, I suppose, she financed her ballet, her schooling, solely by her earnings as a secretary. And she said, I was a good secretary, too. One of the chief confidential secretaries in the First National City Bank in northern China.
Mm.
So I thought that was very interesting, you know, because a lot of times, you know, parents don't want their children doing certain things. You know, it's still happening now.
Right, right.
But
I think that a big part of that, too, was, you know, their history. You know, even though you have the younger generation, and I think a part of something I was reading that she had, Ms. Joy Lunsom had talked about that even though they were people with, you know, yellow skin, they were really British. They were on British soil. They spoke English. They wore English clothes, and they had never visited or set foot in China. So they really had, you know, pretty much British West Indies type of attitude.
Are you there?
I think did you click me off? Can you hear me?
Oh, no, I didn't. But we just lost audio for a minute.
I know. It says what was interesting about it was that it said that initially the children that came over, they were, you know, they were trying to, I guess, kind of like a lot of immigrants were, you know, trying to free themselves from whatever the oppression was in their country. And so they decided to come to, you know, the West Indies, and And then what happens is they begin to birth children that then instead of them taking on Chinese names, they start naming them, you know, just westernized, you know, names and for, you know, surnames and first names. And then ultimately what was really interesting, I was reading something that she said, is she said that, and these generation of children, they couldn't even stand Chinese music. Because now they're West Indies, you know, they're West Indies children, and they're British children. And even though they had yellow skin, they did not relate to the speech of even Chinese. And one of the things that I thought was pretty interesting was they said, unlike their fellow exiles, their Chinese exile brothers or sisters that were exiled in America, who mostly engaged in chop suey and laundry businesses, the Chinese in West Indies, in the West Indies, were engaged in shopkeeping and planting. There are practically no Chinese laborers in the West Indies. Every Chinese aspired to own a shop or a plantation. And they said that the stigma that China is a nation of shopkeepers is almost true if it applies to the West Indies. For under the freedom of British rule, the retail trade, especially in the towns and villages of the West Indies, were prominently Chinese monopoly. One of the things that they said that really, really brings it home, I think, in terms of Jamaica, was it said, black, white, mulatto trade with their yellow brothers happened without any trace of racial awareness.
That's right. That is right.
Pretty interesting. And then it talked about, you know, how the new generation, like the Fang sisters that were more ambitious than their forefathers, and they sought their freedom more, and they didn't want to be, you know, tied to shopkeeping or planting, which previously was considered to be, you know, a good profession. They wanted to move on and get a higher education. And they said a lot of them went on to attend Oxford or in London or Edinburgh universities to search for professional, you know, trades. And that it really kind of got under the skin of the old country people, the sons and daughters of these Chinese people, because they felt that they were, you know, leaving their heritage or something, you know, that they had a worthy profession and that they were leaving something that was, you know, set for them. But a lot of these people, this next generation, just like, you know, generations change, they said, you know, we're not acquainted with these Chinese customs or language, but we will go back and visit our country because of the fact that we don't know that much about it, but it doesn't mean that we agree that we should, you know, either be shopkeepers or planners. So it was pretty interesting. I was like, it's just like any other, you know, group of people. As the next generation come on, you do want them to progress. You don't want them to stay stagnant, and really, that's really what happened for them. And I mean, when you think of the time frame of it, and these young ladies, and how they progressed, and how they traveled, and all the things that they did, it's really kind of amazing.
Oh yes, because you know we're talking about 1909, and you know all of that.
Right there.
And I know travel was difficult, even getting from St. Elizabeth to where they would perhaps get on a boat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what might have been a difficult journey. Plus, you know, getting on a boat and going to China. I mean, that is a long trip,
mm-hmm.
a very, very long trip.
Yeah.
So, and they seem to have gone back and forth a couple of times. But anyway, May, I think, married. First of all, she talked about, or the newspaper article talked about, having Russian teachers, you know, to teach the ballet. You know, the Russians have always been great in the arts. You know,
mm-hmm.
and that's why they do so well at the Olympics in those things. That is a tradition for them. But there were Russian teachers in China at the time.
Oh, okay.
So I thought that was interesting. Also.
Yeah.
So, she met her husband. It's talked about here as well as being married. Her husband she married during her musical training.
Mm-hmm.
It came in very useful. After an accident in China, she turned to teaching, but ballet was always a hobby with her.
Mm-hmm.
So They have articles on her up to 1947. That, and apparently, the name of her husband was Soohih. I'm not quite sure how you pronounce it, but it says here that he was a Russian dancer from the Far East.
Wow, isn't that something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
And his wife, Mrs. May Pang, Soohih. And it mentioned in the article that she was the daughter of the Pangs of Balaclava. But she was married to a Russian.
Wow, okay.
Came home. This is funny because she came home to recuperate. You know, remember it mentioned she had had an accident.
Oh, okay.
I just love learning about all these things. So who are you going to talk about? Which one of these?
I have Rosalind Pang, who was the oldest daughter in 1893 to 1933, which means that means that she would be about, I think she would have passed away when she was like 40, pretty young, I would think. Because May, I think, was from 1894 to 1971, which would have meant she would have been like 77 when she passed away. And but at any rate, she actually was their oldest daughter, and she was at the Royal Academy of Music in London and earned, you know, quite a few medals, you know, from that. And she decided that she wanted a degree of LRAM, and she really moved in that direction at the in pursuit of her studies at the Royal Academy of Music in London. And but what happened for her was that she was studying, and then a war broke out in 1914, and her father brought her home, and it was shortly before she was about to take her test, for the LRAM, and she was really unhappy about that. Again, here you have a very independent young lady who says, you know what, I am very unhappy, I'm not satisfied of not having this degree, I've worked really hard for this. So she decided that she was going to go back to London and sit for the exam, and everybody came to find out that she was very successful and was the first Chinese LRAM. And so she was very happy with, you know, her accomplishment. And, of course, everybody was happy with, you know, with her for that. But anyway, she decided that she was going to go to China, and they were kind of concerned about it because she spoke English and French. But scarcely a trace of having an Oriental accent. They kind of was worried because she did speak, you know, just a little bit of her native tongue, and a little bit of Japanese that she had learned, they said, along the way in California. But they were a little bit concerned, but she decided that she was going to go to Shanghai, and she went there in 1919. And what was really interesting was that not long after she was there, she began to work at the Journal of Commerce with George Sokolsky, a Jewish Polish-American journalist. Actually, he was Jewish Polish-American. He actually had a home in New York. And I think May actually visited that home at some point. But she met him the day she arrived in Shanghai. And she was working, you know, for him, and he made this joke. He said, well, you know what, I'm going to have to marry her so I don't have to pay her. And, you know, even though it was a joke, they said he really was very, he loved her and was very devoted to her. But they did get married in 1922 in a synagogue there, and she was given away by one of a prominent Chinese lawyer and politician there, and they had a, you know, picture of the synagogue and of him and everything. But what happened is then again, you know, it was kind of weird to me where May and Rosalind, who went to China, all of a sudden they're doing their lives there, they just kind of like disappear into obscurity. And maybe that has something to do kind of like with Jamaica, where the radio came. Maybe because of the oppressions in China, they didn't have a lot of media coverage or didn't like a lot of information being put out. But they really had, they did not have a good time in China. You got to imagine, here you have a guy, Sokolsky, who is a Russian Jew / American married to a West Indian Chinese. What a mixture.
Yeah.
You know,
when we talk about all the many one people, we really mean it.
And you know, and they said, you know, really, who did not accept them were the American Expatriate Society.
Of course, yeah.
Because they were like, what in the world is this going on?
Right.
But they pretty much stayed within the Chinese and international community, and he pretty much stayed, you know, kept within his business and political group and all. But they felt that it was kind of sad, and I think that, you know, you kind of heard that from when you were talking about May, the same thing, that they kind of felt sad that I think that whole idea of.
We lost you again?
I don't know. I don't know what's going on, but I keep getting a recording. But at any rate, the bottom line being is that they really felt sad that people weren't more just based upon just who they were versus their race and how they looked racially and all. But pretty much, I don't have, you know, there's not a whole lot of additional information. She just kind of moved into obscurity, and there's not a lot that's said about her. You know, after that time period, she died. They say in 1933 in New York, which is where he had some property, and even after her death, and he did remarry. He continued to have photographs of Rosalyn around his house, and he and his second wife just actually worked to preserve her memory for Eric, who my understanding is, was a child that Rosa and George had in 1927. So that would have been one of the Fang's grandchildren.
Yeah, Eric. Mhm. And his name would be Eric Spolovsky or whatever, however way you pronounce that. So he would have a Jewish last name or a Russian last name. It's interesting that, you know, all of this intermarrying went on, and which is true, and a lot of these people are living all over the world. But I saw an interesting part of all of this research about a particular, I suppose, race of people from China, the Hakkas. Hakkas. Did you notice that, where they said they're the most vital of the you know what I'm talking about? I'm getting a little low on my sugar, so it's spelled Hakkas. How do you say that?
I do remember seeing that. Where they were talking about them. Let me see. I don't know exactly.
It's sort of like a tribe. Aboriginals.
Yeah, Aboriginal people of China, and that was kind of
interesting. And they are described as being strong, independent, vigorous, and excellent pirates, and splendid merchants. Their women never bound their feet. They carried swords in their hair as a protection against rape by the conquering sons of Han, who drove them southward as they moved down the Yellow River to encompass a continent. Isn't that something? They never intermarried, you know, and they continued to speak their own racial dialect. They nonetheless, they're Chinese, for the word Chinese applies to all people who live in the country of China. China has many races, many tribes, many religions, and many human mixtures. So China is really similar. Beg your pardon?
I mean, that's really something. I mean, China almost sounds like Jamaica, doesn't
that's
it?
That's what I was about to say. You know, I didn't even know that about China. So I go through all these things. I'm learning more and more, you know, about the world. I'm like a kid in a China shop, in a candy shop.
I'm trying to figure it out. I was trying to understand when I saw that. Is he saying then that when Rosalyn died that he married a woman who was a Hakkai, who was aboriginal?
Aboriginal is pronounced, yes.
a person?
I'm not sure if that's who is being described in this. You know, these are all, as I say, clippings from the newspaper.
Yes, but you know why? Because at the end it does say George Sikowski from the Atlantic, August 1933.
Right. So my point is, a lot of this material that she is reading from or getting the information from is not that legible. You know, because these papers are old, when they were printed and how they're stored, they're perhaps deteriorating. You know, it's not everything is not online like it is now. You know, all the newspaper has been online for some years now, but we're talking about in all this time, you know, 1912 and 22 that was being done. So Dr. Lumsden is getting her material from the actual newspapers, I gather. So she's just trying to piece anything that she can come across. So if anyone knows anything about Eric and where he might be, then that would be interesting to have him get in touch with our website or Dr. Lumsden's website, because this is important information that she would like to at least have some more information on. But I didn't know that I didn't realize that China was so diverse, you know, in many races. And they're all called Chinese because they're part of China. You know, they might be separate in who they are in terms of a tribe or a religion, but regardless, they're all considered Chinese. So they're talking about this special species or race, which is the Hakkas, H-A-K-K-A-S. They say that they built railroads in the United States. They developed mines in Malaya. They cultivated rubber in Java. Nearly a century ago, my wife's ancestors appeared in the British West Indies, where they became merchants. So he's talking about her. He's talking about me. When he spoke about that. So apparently her ancestors, we didn't hear much about her mother. There's nothing much about her mother and where her mother came from. We know her father, but like everything else, the reporters in those days would really mention more about the men than the women. That is Rosalind that we were talking about, isn't it?
Yeah, Rosalind, yeah.
Right. Yeah. And now, did you do anything on Inez Beatrice? And I'm just intrigued with these names, to Donna. Let us remind our listeners that they're listening to Backyard Labrish, and we're just getting really carried away by some research by Dr. Joy Lumsden, who happens to be our person of the week, on a family of seven sisters who were born in Balaclava, St. Elizabeth. And I'm sure that some of my listeners I know definitely are from St. Elizabeth. I have friends who are from St. Elizabeth, and they can perhaps relate to some of these names. But who went into politics now? Which one of them? I think it was Inez.
I know that, well, you know, Inez, I had on here that Inez, what I had was 1898, and that she traveled on the Zacapa. What is the Zacapa?
It's a ship, the name of a ship, because that's the only way people traveled in those days.
Okay, from Kingston to New York. Okay, apparently on her way to the Dean Academy, Franklin, Massachusetts, and they had some pictures of her there. Actually, which is kind of interesting, is that, you know, here she is. She's coming from Jamaica, and they actually had her in the New York Times as a prize student of politics. And so she won this annual prize that's offered to the students of New York University, showing their proficiency in the study of political science and public affairs. And she says she plans on a public career for herself in China following her graduation. And so anyway, she does graduate with honors from New York University, and then she has an extensive business and political career for herself in China among her own people. Now that's what she says. She has the entire support of both her parents, but it was kind of interesting that they described her as a demure little Chinese girl born on an island of Jamaica. You really wouldn't think of someone who's demure and, you know, the way that they describe her as being a political leader. But, you know, they said that, you know, she did decide that she was going to go on to, you know, to have a political career. But now when I saw they had a little an abstract in there of her, and they were talking about, you know, her father, who was kind of conservative, learned when it came to matters of education and mapping out the future of his daughter Inez, one of seven sisters, the middle one. Ever since she was a little girl, she had been the boy of the family,
even though she was considered demure. That's really something else.
Isn't that kind of like a contradiction, though?
Yeah, but, you know, you can have, she was, although she was tiny and petite is what they would call it now, you know, she was boyish.
Yeah.
She liked to do boyish things, and in those days, men were the politician, and, you know, I suppose if women tried to get into politics, it was a little alarming, but I just think that these young ladies, for the times they grew up in, they were really pioneers. They really were. And we knew, I didn't know anything of them before. I mean, it's really just so intriguing to me.
Yeah, well, she was saying that, you know, she was talking about her sisters being musical, and she says, I like music, but when it came to, you know, studying and life, she wanted to take up business and politics, and she knew her father, you know, he didn't know which way to go on that, whether or not he liked it or not, but, you know, as a Chinese/English father, he just pretty much kind of like resigned himself to letting his daughters get the education that they wanted. You know, and so he felt that they should do the music and arts and literature and things like that, but he decided that he would allow her, because of the fact that she was so boyish, to take on, you know, the business and things like that, which he had always classified as boy things, business, law, medicine, things like that, and all. But then she says he likes to talk with me about business and world politics with a smile, you know, like to say, yeah, he says all these things. But I think he finally resigned himself that he couldn't have a son after all of these, and he decided, well, I'll just take her and talk to her about business politics. I can't talk to any of the other girls about it.
Well, listen, at least, you know, out of seven of them, at least there was one who was sort of boyish, you know, so he could relate to her. But I want to welcome caller from 646-479. If you'd like to join the Labrish, just hit 1 on your keypad. But we're just busy here. To our listeners online, you're listening to Backyard Labrish, and we're here each Wednesday at 8 o'clock. And we are celebrating and actually preserving some of our history. And a lot of this history that we're uncovering is brought to us by our person of the week, who's Dr. Joy Lumsden, who is a historian and doing a lot of research on Jamaica of the past, back in the day. Back to you, Donna.
Yeah, well, just want to just kind of add that, just like you were saying previously, that you know, Dr. Lumsden, she has quite a few questions as to what transpired. But in reading this, there's, you know, of course, there's a huge gap. She wanted to know whether or not she went back to China. She wanted to know, you know, like her sisters, what exactly happened, because it's like a big, huge gap. One of the things that she did realize was that she had went to Cuba. And so really when I thought about, because I thought, okay, you have this boyish girl who wants to be in business and politics and should do it in China? China of all places? I don't think that's going to work. You know, I'm saying to myself, what is she thinking about? She doesn't know anything about China during that period of time, because her sisters go there and kind of go into obscurity. She probably went there and realized that this was not going to work, and went to Cuba, which is kind of interesting. Again, Jamaican, she was a Jamaican. You might as well say she was Jamaican, even though she had Chinese, you know, blood. Jamaica's to go anywhere. She decided, you know what, I'm just going to go to Cuba where there's, you know, a lot of political stuff going on. And she moves there, and they and she says even from 1940 until her sister May died in 1971, that she lived in Cuba even after the revolution, and she married Abel Fernandez. And that she and her husband traveled through and into and out of Jamaica frequently, but and that her sisters visited her in Cuba, but that pretty much, you know, that was her life there in Cuba. And but that she had Jose Abel and Abel Jr.
And they attended Monroe. But that is what I wanted to let our listeners know. She was Jamaican. She married a Cuban, a Spanish man. His name is Fernandez. She had three sons. Abel and Abel Jr. And they attended Monroe in the early 1940s. So I'm sure that I might be able to give us some information on them. And that would be Jose Fernandez, right? Is that right, Donna?
Right, yes.
Abel and Abel Jr., they all attended, and she got that from Monroe's. You see, once she's on to somebody and she know they have children or boys, she would research the any information of that particular school to see when they started, when they graduated. This is very tedious work. This is why, I mean, I think as Jamaicans, everyone in the diaspora is or should be indebted to Dr. Joy Lumsden. So I just want to give a shout out to her. I hope she's listening, and let her know how much we appreciate her and what a joy it is for me to be just introduced to all of this wonderful material, because I just love history. And the fact that there's so much interesting history about my heritage and my country, and some of it during the period I grew up that I knew nothing about, I am just on cloud nine. I really am. So anyone out there who might know any of these young people or people, kindly get in touch with Dr. Joy Lumsden or visit Backyard Libraries and let us know. So they left for Havana, and they were past students. Mr. and Mrs. Fernandez's son left for Havana, and they were past students of Monroe College. And this was in the Gleaner in 1971, I think. No. She died in 71. She died in 1971. And there is another article in the paper of 1916 that said, the suffering Jews in Poland help the sufferers in the war zone. The following is the present position of the Fund for the Relief of Suffering Jews in Russia and in Poland. Already acknowledged, and they have the amount of money that was acknowledged. And Miss Lucy Pang has sent a beautiful worked cushion covered as a contribution to the fund. Now, that is another sister. We have heard her name before, have we, Donna?
No. But you know what's really, now I have Inez at 1898, but I also have...
No, and in Jamaica, that spelling is pronounced Inez.
Oh, Inez.
Uh-huh.
But then I also, now Amy Lucille, I had her as 1898. Were they twins or...
I don't know. It doesn't, and I'm sure Dr. Lumsden might not know either, because she's just researching whatever. Whenever she gets a piece that mentions a name or an occasion, you know, she puts it together. She's just trying. It's like a jigsaw puzzle.
Right. And
she's trying to fit the pieces in. So most of the information, she posts it as she finds it. And she might be working on something else when she finds something about this family, and she'll just go post it on the page. So it's not necessarily in chronological order. She tries to keep it that way. But I can imagine how difficult it is for her. And sometimes she mentions in her little post that, you know, she's just running around from one research project to the next and just putting up something here and putting up something there. But we just want her to know that we appreciate it. We can take our time in putting the pieces together. So Lucille apparently was involved in raising funds during 1916 for the Jews in Poland. And that could be because of the connection of her sister being married to a Jew.
Mm-hmm.
You see the connection there, Jewish person.
Right, yeah, and also, wouldn't you think that, I don't know, you know, what the time frame is on it, but I know you've spoken quite a bit about Jews even in Jamaica, so it would have been, to me, if that were the case, if Jews were in Jamaica, then those girls would have been brought up around them, and they wouldn't have thought anything of saying, well, they're, you know, just people, and let's help, you know, these people, you know, as opposed to someone who hadn't had any exposure, you know, to say, well, you know, that's not my issue or whatever. I would think that, you know, I don't know, you know, if the how the time, you know, flows on that in terms of Jewish people coming into Jamaica, but
well, they
you
came
know.
There early. They came there early, very, very early.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we have one of the oldest Jewish synagogues in this part of the world. So, they go back many, many, many centuries.
Right.
But what intrigued me about this is that she was the second one who was involved in. Like she was a philanthropist, you know, she was collecting for less fortunate or for suffering people. Because remember, we named one before May. May did that from she was 11.
Right.
So here's another sister who apparently she was the one who would make things she sewed because this was a quilt or something that she donated. And they talked about how beautiful it was. It was a cushion cover. And she contributed that to the fund. And they were telling that where you should send the contributions. And the name Myers here was Mr. Myers, Horace V. Myers was the chairman and acting treasurer of the fund at that time. We're very familiar with that name.
Mm-hmm.
And from 1920 to 1950, Lucille, which is the same one who made the cushion, she traveled to and from Jamaica, visiting the USA, Cuba, and England. In 1951, she contributed 3 guineas to the Hurricane Relief Fund, which is that is money to it's not animals.
That's a lot of money.
In those days, it was yes. In those days, it was a lot of money. It is interesting that she was the only one of the 5 surviving sisters who was presently at May Sushi's funeral. She and Gladys were the executors of May's will. So this sister who was Lucille, she and Gladys, who we haven't spoken about Gladys yet, were the executors of May's will. Apparently May was the second daughter. Wouldn't you? That's how it seemed to flow.
Yeah, May. That's the way I'm. Yeah, that's the way I have is that she's the second daughter because I had that she was born in 1894, and then Hilda and then Inez would have been and then Lucille would have been 5th, and that's what I have on here. She has so Lucille is the 5th of 7 Fang sisters.
Well, now we want to talk about Mildred.
Mildred
went to Wilmer's.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
You know, that's interesting because, you know, we've had some Wilmer's old girls on our show already. But she went to the school during 1916. She was one of the Pang sisters, and she was taking part in concerts. She was one of the musicians during World War I period. In June 1919, Mildred, along with her father, Charles, and 3 members of the Titan Kui family left Jamaica on this special ship for New York. Apparently, according to the Ellis Island records, here's Ellis Island records again. Everyone passing through New York, I think, had to go through Ellis Island. They were all on their way to Shanghai. In November, Miss Pang is noted as returning from England on this Camelito or which is a ship, I'm still. So it is not entirely clear whether Mildred ever reached China. In 1929, the Wilmer's Centenary souvenir lists her as Mrs. Denuter, D-E-N-E-U-T-E-R, and she was living in Brussels at the time. So apparently she must have married a foreigner.
Mm-hmm.
So Dr. Lumsden said, I have no further information on this period of her life, and she's never referred to by that name in any later references. So these Pan girls married, they were augurs, so those who married and had different names.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard for her to connect the dots, you know, once they were finished with their education and got involved with, you know, making families. She believes that she might have been in Belgium at the time of the German invasion during 1940, and that apparently she went to England, where she was living for a few years. Now, the Daily Gleaner of December 15, 1949, has an article here where, among other passengers, was Miss Mildred Pang, daughter of Mr. and Mrs. Charles Pang of Balaclava, who is home on a month's vacation. She said she had just finished work on the film The Black Rose, a 20th Century Fox production starring Tyrone Power and Orson Welles. Miss Pang was cast as the Empress of China.
Wow.
And in those days, I don't know if there are any seniors on the listening online or on our call like me, but I can relate. Donna, I'm sure you don't know who Tyrone Power is, do you?
No.
He was a very famous movie star. And you've heard of Orson Welles, have you?
Yes, I've heard of Orson Welles.
Okay, well, Tyrone Power was very handsome and was what you would consider perhaps a hunk, as I remember him. So to be cast with him on a 20th Century Fox production is a big deal, or would have been a big deal in those years. Don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. And she left Jamaica to return to her home in England, where she resides. This is what the article was saying in 1950. She's a member of a well-known family from Balaclava. She's a close friend of Mr. and Mrs. Atlee, A-T-T-L-E-E, and will assist Mrs. Atlee in organizing two large charity functions due to take place this season in London. She's pretty petite, and she wears most fascinating Chinese clothes of silk, richly embroidered, and she attended some formal affair, and they were describing her cocktail outfit for the evening. Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed to have been quite a hit.
Oh, my goodness.
She confesses that her most thrilling experience was acting with Tyrone Power in The Black Rose, where she played the part of the Chinese Empress. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
And she apparently starred in other films, too, but that was the only one mentioned here. So here we have politician, actress, musician, you know, philanthropist. I mean, this family was something else. Isn't that something? I mean, I am just... And there was a mention here about the dancing. Did you have any information on any of the other sisters?
Which one?
The one I was talking about, Mildred.
I'm Gladys. You know, not a whole lot. She just had a little bit of information, the youngest of the Fang sisters, and she attended the Warmers Girls School from 1916 to 1919. Gladys was born in 1901 through 1987, so she lived like 86 years, which is, you know, pretty good. And she said, and here she also says, virtually nothing's been found about Gladys' activities from 1999 to now, when she is noted at that at the Walmers bicentenary souvenir as studying millinery in Brussels. Since her sister Mildred was recorded as being married and living in Belgium, she was presumably staying with her. However, she is back in Jamaica in 1930 and then returns to Europe, to London, and to Paris. And this is by the summer, she's back on the island and opened a hat shop on Harbor Street, which is pretty neat. That's pretty a hat shop on Harbor Street.
Yes, that is our downtown Kingston. That is, in those days, you know, people got custom hats made.
Well, she went to millinery school, and so it says something about Miss Gladys Fang has just returned from London and Paris with exclusive model hats and berets and all smart millinery materials and accessory. And each hat is fitted to the individual wearer and her costume and the essentials of Parisian chic. And,
wow.
and she also followed the family's musical tradition, and is indicated by these musical exams that she has a listing of here for her. But it says that there's a reference to Gladys Fang in 1930s are her arrivals and departures on trips to Cuba and England. She's still living in Balaclava
is pronounced.
Okay, but was apparently in England when war broke out. And so she kind of has a little break up there, but it talked about they had a lot of information. They had a little article about comments on people and places and bombing planes funds have taken new impetus since last week when the special quadrant drive was started, and this Saturday there will be a grand bombing plane dance and fair at Balaclava, and organized by Miss Gladys Fang to take place at her residence, and so which is a delightful country town to visit this weekend. So I've assumed that this is, she says, for fun, FUN, and the fund, FUND. So again, here you have her organizing something at her residence so that, you know, she can, you know,
raise money. Cool.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool. And they said that it was a pretty good success. Amounts already alleged in terms of donation were quite extensive. And it looks like it's saying 11,120 lire, something to that effect. And then they kind of break down proceeds from everything that they got along the way, but it seems as though
we lost you again. So I don't know what's happening. We're having a little technical difficulty with our system tonight. But for those of you who might still be able to hear me, you're listening to Blog Talk Radio. Our co-host has just got perhaps a little disconnected. Hopefully she'll come back on, but this is Backyard Labrish, and you're listening to Margaret Marshall, and I'd like to, we have a couple minutes left, just about 8 minutes left. I'd like to thank my listeners for tuning in, thank my callers for calling, and if you'd like to just say hi or let your voice be heard, just touch one on your keypad, and I'll see that you want to introduce yourself. And I will open up the mic to you. And for our callers online, I want to thank you for tuning in. And I want to ask you to tell your friends that they can just spend a relaxing hour with us, learning about something about the past and some history about Jamaica. We just here to elaborate, relax, be enlightened, chill, and just pretend we're feeling those wonderful trade winds pass over our easy chair as we visualize the wonderful evenings that we used to spend in our backyards in Jamaica while we laborish. So please tell your friends to join us and help us build our community. And we're so happy you tuned in tonight. to help us celebrate Dr. Joy Lumsden, our Person of the Week, and the Pang Sisters of Balaclava. And we talked about several of them tonight, but we invite you to get to Dr. Lumsden's website and check them out. But actually, I wanted to let you know that Dr. Lumsden is still trying to find some more information on this family and their offsprings. So if anyone is familiar with any of these names and know any of these, seem like there were only boys that were born to these ladies. One would be Eric Soloski, S-O-K-O-L-S-K-Y, and he was the son of Rocklin. And there is Jose, Abe, and Abel Fernandez, and they are the sons of Inez, and whose daughter was Madame P. Lee. I didn't know about that. Do you remember that name, Donna? Are you there, Donna?
Can you hear me?
Oh, you're back. No, well, we lost you for a while. But in the reference here, she is referring, Dr. Lumsden refers to a daughter of Madame P. M.P. Lee. And I don't remember if we covered anything for someone whose last name was Lee. But she says, I would be very grateful for any help in obtaining some information about the next generation of the descendants of Charles and Mary Pang, P-H-A-N-G, of Balaclava, St. Elizabeth. So do spread the word and let us know if you know someone that knows anything about this family. But I hope you've enjoyed just researching the history of this wonderful family from Balaclava. And for all you people from St. Elizabeth, you're perhaps familiar with some of these names. And I just want to tell you that it's always a thrill for me to be here in the backyard with you. And Donna, has never been to Jamaica, but just has a love and passion for Jamaica and for history on a whole. I want to thank Donna for her dedication and drive and helping me to spread the word and also to celebrate and preserve the rich culture of our wonderful Jamaican heritage. Donna, would you like to have some parting words?
Yeah, well, really quick, just want to say that one person that we didn't get to was Hilda.
Let's about Hilda. We have just 4 minutes.
Well, Hilda was the third daughter. She was born in 1896. And, of course, again, you have a person who was into the music and all of that. And, of course, she also believed in doing certain things to help. She had children's feet afternoon, different concerts that she would put on to raise funds for various charities and things like that. I'm just kind of skimming, but she did visit, of course, Ellis Island again, go to New York where her sister Rosalyn was. I think a lot of them went through New York because of Rosalyn and her husband being, both having a residence in New York as well as in China. And it says that she did marry an American. His name was Duran. Although there's not a lot of information with that, but she had a huge connection with Rosalind's husband, and it kind of talks about that a little bit. And that there was a picture, it's with Rosalind, and they're thinking that it's with Hilda, but they're not sure if it's Hilda and Inez. And so, of course, she wants to know if anybody would check and look, and maybe they can give her some information with regards to that, but. Again, Hilda was the third sister, and she did a lot of fun for the relief suffering Jews in Russia and Poland, a lot of contributions along the way, and then there's of course some various pictures and things like that. But just wanted to kind of get her in. It's been a but I did not see anything with regards to any other grandchildren other than those three boys, which is kind of interesting that there were seven girls that and they ended up having three
boys. Yes. But I just want to end by saying to the young Jamaicans or Jamaicans or people just from any heritage that's from Jamaica, that we have a long history of women and men who's really passionate about a good education. Jamaicans have always been travelers with a quest for knowledge. So I want to encourage you in your educational quest to just remember that you're from a strong line of people who know the importance of a good education. So no matter how hard it might seem, believe you me, it's well worth your while to stick with it. And just remember that you're not alone. A lot of people before you who had much more difficult times did it, and you can do it also. So continue to make us proud, and tune in next week for something else that we will be lavishing about. So we only have 1 minute left. Donna, I want to say good night, and it was a joy and a pleasure to hear the lavish.
Yes, well, everyone, please go to backyardlabrish.com, and we look forward to hearing you in the backyard next week.
Okay, bye-bye. See you next week.